Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Cambridge 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, Ross and Senna from MLB Network in just a few moments. But first, Kevin has been driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week as he talks to Pat O'Brien on the phone.
No, I'm done now. I'm done. I finished up during the news there, so we're good to go. But I can tell you that if I was talking to Pat O'Brien on the phone in the Sunbury Motors Hyundai Sonata Limited, I'd be using the Bluetooth option that is available where you can connect your phone right to the car. You can call your music up on it. You can call someone on the phone, which is very convenient if you do a long interview with someone like I usually do. And you're in the comfort of your vehicle, driving along on the highway, focusing on the road, two hands on the wheel at 10 and 2, because safety first. And you have the great audio sound of the Infinity sound system, so you can hear every word Pat would be talking to you. That's if you own the Sunbury Motors Hyundai Sonata Limited. The 2015 Hyundai Sonata Limited has 0% APR financing for 60 months, even low financing for 72 months, and maybe even some cash back as well. Find out more at Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and online at sunburymotors.com.
I just talked to Paul Keels. He says he's anxious to talk to you tomorrow.
It's going to be exciting.
So what questions do you have for about Ohio State?
I don't know. I'll prepare for that tonight. So, like, you have a really good team, don't you?
Feel like I'm listening to Vivian Lee and Gone with the Wind.
Like, remember last week when you were behind then you caught up? That was really cool.
Well, I'll take care of it tomorrow. Tomorrow is another day.
I always loved those Chris Farley segments on Saturday Night Live where he did the interviews. I always thought that was too funny. Remember when you were a Beatle? Well, yeah, I do. That was really cool.
And we're going to hear the entire skit.
I don't have it memorized.
Even Sean Carey's rolling his eyes. Right. Okay. And he's your biggest supporter.
No, Chief is.
Doesn't know any better.
He just feels obligated to me. We spend so much time together, he feels obligated.
You guys are a great team. Ross and Sina joins us now from MLB Network. Hi, Ross. Welcome.
Yeah, great to be with you again. Long time no talk. So, how about that Rangers-Blue Jays game last night?
I'm going to ask you about that. That's how surreal was that? What was it like in the newsroom watching that one?
I mean, that seventh inning, I don't think I've seen so many different emotions throughout that inning, from the Russell Martin Shinsu Chu call in the top of the seventh to Jose Bautista's home run to the garbage being thrown. I think it was nearly an hour. I don't think I've ever heard of an inning taking that long. You know, mostly it was due to the fact they were trying to get that call right on Martin and Chu, but I don't think any of us, even just newsroom or, you know, the casual baseball fan, have seen such a rush of emotions on both sides of the ball in that game, you know, regular season or postseason.
It was insane. What was the reaction on the throw by Martin? Did everybody in the room know the rule at the time or not?
I think the problem was early on was the I can't remember the home plate umpire at the top of my head who it was, but I think the issue first of all with the call was that he called it a dead ball initially. I know in my experiences playing the game that the guy in the box is he's entitled to the batter's box. I know I've had situations where I was behind the plate when I was younger, where there were batters that got in my way, and I had to manage to work around them. And in the situation with Chu and Martin, a little bit, it was a little bit nonchalant back to the pitcher, his throw back to the pitcher, but Chu didn't do anything to interfere with him. He was just standing there minding his own business, moving his bat around. It wasn't really his fault there. And I think no one really knew the rule at first. I think it's rule 603 in the rule book. But I think the issue, first of all, like I said, was the fact that the home plate umpire called it a dead ball but still allowed Odor to score at home. And I think the umpires did a phenomenal job congregating. Some people might disagree with me on my opinion, but they did a good job because after the seventh inning, it's all up to the umpire's discretion. Gibbons and Jeff Banister, it's not up to them. They can't just go up to them and say, I want this replay. It's going to be up to the umpire's discretion to go to New York. And their job there, which is, like I said, done correctly, was to replay the rule book itself. They got it correct. They, in that situation, the ball should not have been dead. It's a live ball because Chu in no way interfered. He's entitled to his own batter's box, which allowed Odor to score. So it was a back and forth ticky tacky situation at first, but the umpires did, 100% did the correct thing in trying to interpret the rule correctly.
I mean, Chu was either looking at his bat or looking out at the mound. I mean, yeah, he had the bat out over the plate, but he wasn't looking back at Martin trying to do anything except get ready for the next pitch.
And he wasn't hanging over the plate or anything. He wasn't trying to, he wasn't trying to interfere with him, trying to have any impact on the game or anything. He was just minding his own business in the box. So.
That was inadvertent as inadvertent gets. Now, what about the play at the plate, and especially after the Utley play the other night with Tejada? Jeff Banister wanted a double play. What was the judgment on that one, especially 48 hours after the Utley play?
I think, I know Banister wanted, I know on the broadcast yesterday they were mentioning how Gibbons and Banister are both former catchers. And they know the situation in terms of plays of the plate and the new, Buster Posey rule, as most people like to call it and everything. But I think the interpretation of that rule was, in the case of that, was the play at the plate, I know it was another takeout slide. They were trying to take that away at second base because of Utley, because of, Coughlin and Jung Ho Gung earlier in September. But I think it was more along the lines of once the ball is thrown to the catcher at home, he's basically a fielder in himself, so there's none of that blocking the plate rule can be applied there. It's pretty much fair game. It's essentially like any other double play would be on any part of the infield, so the runner is entitled to slide or break up any sort of play, because it's just the same play you would see at second trying to take a fielder out at second baseman or shortstop, but it just so happened to be a catcher in that situation.
Right. But he slides so dramatically to the inside of, toward the pitcher side of the plate.
It's trying to, and I think it was Ben Revere going to first, so I think, I can't remember off the top of my head who that was sliding into home, but I think their job was to try to give, Ben Revere's a fast guy anyway, so he probably wouldn't have gotten doubled up anyway, but I think his job was to try to, at all costs, try to keep that inning going. It is a postseason game, so they're trying to do whatever it takes to keep the inning going and try to keep the Blue Jays' hopes alive.
Right, and the umpires are probably trying to do whatever they can to not determine winning and losing.
Exactly.
I'm sure that comes into a lot of it. Tonight, Dodgers and Mets. What are your thoughts on Greinke versus DeGrom, and then we'll get into the Cubs here in a moment?
I think it's a pretty, the numbers won't say for itself during the regular season. Greinke had one of the better years of a starting pitcher since the mound was lowered in terms of ERA numbers. Same with Arrieta in the Cubs side, as you said. We'll talk about a little bit later. But I'm going to give, and this will surprise you, I'm going to give the slight edge to DeGrom. For the reason that I see it might be a little bit of a push in terms of who's got the advantage of lineups. Maybe I'll give the nod a little bit to the Mets, considering they've been so hot since the trade deadline. Murphy's had a good postseason. They do have a consistent David Wright and Cespedes. Michael Conforto's had himself a good last few months. And I'm just not too confident in what the Dodgers have to offer in their lineup. So I'm going to give a little bit of an advantage to DeGrom in that pitching matchup, but I ultimately see both of them, for all we know, they're going to go six, seven, you know, seven and a third innings, and they're going to give up no runs or one run each, and it's going to be a close game, which I wouldn't be shocked one bit, or the entire baseball world wouldn't be shocked one bit that it's going to, you know, it's going to be a pitcher's duel. And I think it's going to come down to the middle relief, and that's been the case with those two teams down the stretch. Can Chris Hatcher, can Pedro Baez, can those guys from the Dodgers who were terrible in September, can they bridge the gap to Kenley Jansen if Zach Greinke can, you know, allow 0-1-2 runs, give them a shot going into those latter innings? Same thing goes for the Mets, and they don't really have any lefty options. They got Tyler Clippard for a reason to face lefties. The Dodgers are a lefty-heavy team, so it might be up to a guy like Tyler Clippard in middle relief for them. So I will say that it's going to be pitcher's duel, as many expect, and it's going to come down to how the middle relief does to try to get you two really good closers in Kenley Jansen for the Dodgers and Jeurys Familia for the Mets.
The rules of engagement are different in managing your bullpen and how you manage a game at this time of the year as opposed to a three-game set in July. Thus, David Price came in relief in Game 4 down in Arlington. Thus, Dallas Keuchel pitched last night. We all know that, you know, obviously the Astros have been eliminated. Johnny Cueto had to be the starter yesterday in Game 5. And Kershaw had to came back on short rest and pitched brilliantly in the win the other night. Greinke goes tonight. The Cubs, on the other hand, are done. And thus, they can really set their rotation like they would normally set their rotation for a three-game set in San Diego, as opposed to, say, the Dodgers win. The Dodgers will be out of rotation. Kershaw and Greinke will not go back-to-back. They can't. So what are your thoughts about how these playoffs play out and how you have to almost manage the game differently at this time of the year, and even manage a series differently compared to the nice everything's in order in August and September?
Well, I mean, to answer the first part of what you said, your statement there, the Cubs have already lined up John Lester for Game 1 and Jake Arrieta for Game 2. So they've placed everything in their favor, like you said. That was just announced not too long ago. So it all comes down to whatever they win, and by the way,
would go 5 and 6. See, that's it's not just the front part, it's the back part that becomes important. Suddenly, you not only have them in 1 and 2, you've got them in 5 and 6. That's where
Correct.
I think that's where the being able to play it the way you want comes into play.
Yeah, and you know, Jake Arrieta showed a little bit of a chink in his armor in that last start against the Cardinals, but he still has had an unprecedented run in that second half. So who knows how he can bounce back in that? And obviously, John Lester has a good recent history in terms of success in the postseason. But back to your original question, it's basically doing. They'd be doing whatever it takes to win. You know, granted, a lot of people, especially in the department or just in baseball in general, wasn't really too fond of allowing, you know, one situation in general, like you said, David Price coming in to pitch in Game 4 and therefore not letting him pitch Game 5. But there's two reasons behind that. One, David Price hasn't had some success in the postseason as of late. I think it's 6 or 7 consecutive starts without a win or consecutive losses.
Yeah, his record's 2-6 lifetime because he picked up that win in relief the other day.
Yeah, so that's something. And you know, he might win the Cy Young, but as we've noticed especially with Clayton Kershaw in his past few years and his before last night or before the other day, of course, his troubles in the postseason. But I think it was that. And they wanted to get him in a situation where they needed their best possible pitcher at the same time. Their best possible pitcher in a situation where they needed a left-hander was called for to use David Price because they don't have Brett Cecil anymore. He's out for, if I'm not mistaken, the rest of the postseason. Yes. He was their only left-handed option. And Aaron Loop, another, you know, big back end of the relief, bullpen guy for the Jays, also out for that game. So they needed David Price, unfortunately.
Well, it was 7-1 when he came in.
Yeah, I understand that, but
I'm just saying that's, when your back is to the wall, 7-1 doesn't feel that comfortable.
Okay, your back is to the wall. And I honestly think that was the part that had everyone scratching their heads, that big of a margin. But I think because it is the postseason, as we saw with the Royals and the Astros the day before, that gigantic comeback, I think John Gibbons knew that no lead is safe in the postseason. We saw that in the AL wild card game last year with the Royals and the A's, that no lead is safe. So I think that's why he went with Price specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks so much, Ross. Appreciate it. It's been fun so far.
Yep, no problem. And hope to talk to you soon, Steve.
Ross Insana, MLB Network. Is there a field at Beaver Stadium at the moment? No, but we'll tell you about it in a moment. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. We want to see you in a Kia.
Sunbury Motors Kia. This month at Sunbury Motors Kia is a spooktacular sales event for a limited time only.
What does a spooky deal mean?
Really, really good and spooky.
Just stop. But yes, the deals at Sunbury Motors Kia are spooky good this month. But not because of Halloween. Kia has authorized us to provide employee pricing on all models this month. Plain and simple, you pay invoice minus all factory incentives on every model we have. That means the very best deals of the year from the dealer you already know to give you great deals year-round. Big savings on the 7-passenger Sereno SUV, the agile handling and first-class features of the Sportage, and the fuel-sipping Optima. Plus, with 0% financing available and a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, these deals are scary good.
Now that's the holiday spirit.
Owning a brand new Kia is more affordable than ever at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
Well, the field's been in there for, I want to say, 11 or 12 years, 5 straight home games, and 3 of them with rain. And the fourth one that had some rain didn't do it any good. And so they tore the field out of Beaver Stadium. So what they've done is they've torn out everything from goal line to goal line, the width of the field, and the 50-yard player and coaches boxes. Everything else, the end zones and the areas beyond the coaches boxes on each side have all been left in. They'll bring in new sod. They'll put it down. This is the third time they have done this. Over the last 22 years, something like that. They did it in 1993. After the Rutgers game, they brought a new field in. That field lasted 12 years. They did it again, and I think it was 5 they did it. And that field lasted 10 years, where they did it mid-season. Had a little extra time to do it. So they have had great success over the years of installing a field at Beaver Stadium mid-season with trucking inside and getting the field prepared. And I was in there yesterday, and, you know, it's really odd when you look out over it and you see nothing but dirt. Well, you know, they'll truck it in and get it done, and they've got 2 games to go in this one, then they'll let it settle in for the winter. Just a side note. It's a big deal for Herb Combs and the guys. It's, you know, but in reality, from the outside looking in, no big deal. The other one was getting you know, coming up in chunks, getting torn up. You know, older field, 5 straight games. Yeah, and James is a lot like Joe Paterno, Bill O'Brien. They all had the same theory about practicing in there. They usually just scrimmaged in there. So it's not as if it's getting crushed by overuse. But when you have 5 straight games like that and the moisture and everything like that comes up.
Is the theory about not practicing and just scrimmaging in there mainly because of the fact that it just makes those game days even more special?
No.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Well, there's no need to go in. There's no need to go in there and do it.
Well, I understand, but I would think that, you know, no, it would take away from that game day experience if you practiced in there more often.
Kevin, you got to get everybody on buses. You got to take them over on buses. You got to drive over. You got to go in. You got to set up over there. You got to bring all the stuff over in trucks to do it. It's not that easy, actually, to practice in the stadium. You actually have to transport everything over.
It's more logistics.
That's not near as romantic sounding.
No, but once again, it's the correct answer.
You suck all the fun out of sports with your logic.
Well, no, but that's the reason why. I mean, just setting it up. And you got to truck all the stuff over just to set up. Now, the players love going in. They scrimmage it there. Everybody loves going over in there. No doubt everybody loves to go over there. But it sure is a lot easier to walk out of the locker room and have everything all set up for you on the practice field.
I get that.
From a practical standpoint, it actually takes a lot to go from outside to inside. And you're on the same practice field, let alone truck everything over.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
I feel like I've killed your sports experience.
Not any more than you did several thousand times earlier in the last 4 years.
I'm sorry.
I understand logistically it makes sense, but, you know, could part of the reason be that, you know, they want to make entering that stadium a special moment for the players?
No. Not really. It's all about logistics, and it's all about not tearing up the turf.
We're going to do a new open for this program. You know, ABC Sports did Wide World of Sports, spanning the globe to bring you the constant variety of sports, spanning the globe and sucking the fun out of all sports.
I mean, they'll scrimmage in there, but they don't, you know, and he'll do, for example, he'll do one practice in there where they don't do any running in there at all, where they'll just be in there. He'll take them in there one day in the preseason, and they'll just bark out situations on the sidelines. Okay, I want to have the onside kick unit. I want to have the punt unit. I want to have, you know, and they all got to go out, boom, okay, let's go back to the sideline. I mean, they'll do that. But they don't, you know, they take recruits into that stadium all the time. But in terms of practicing there, the logistics of taking all the practice gear off the practice field or out of Haluba Hall, depending on the situation, and then trucking it all over, and then, oh, and then you're done. You got to put it back in the truck. You got to truck it all back and put it back. You got to bus the entire team over. You got to bus the entire team back. And not only that, but, you know, if you do it so often, they just replaced the field. They're in the process of replacing the field this week. Yeah. And you have to. You have, if you tore it up after five games in there, how much are you going to tear it up by having multiple practices in there? Hello?
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. I mean, if you have I live in the high school football world where, you know, the field only gets so many, what they like to call it, compressions. They want to limit the amount of compressions on the field because it's very expensive at the high school level to try and replace a field.
Well, this field's being replaced at midseason now.
So I know exactly what you mean by that.
This field was in place for 10 or 11 years, so, I mean, it worked out fine. They did the same thing. They had to replace it in midseason. They had to replace the one in 93 midseason, early in the season. They had to replace it. It just wasn't working, so they had to do that. And they was rock solid for 12 years. Herb Combs and his group take great care of it. But you know what? A lot of people have talked for years, for example, about, you know, why don't you have some concerts in Beaver Stadium? Nothing rips a field apart more than a concert. A concert rips fields apart. And that is a big issue. And a perfect example is where they're playing the Super Bowl. Levi's Stadium has now been open for 15 months. They'll play the Super Bowl there in February. Do you want to know how many times that field in 15 months has been replaced? 7 times. because the 49ers not only play there, but they put soccer in there. They have concerts in there. And all the concerts rip the living daylights out of a field.
Don't they usually put, like, plywood or something over top of the field, though?
It doesn't matter. It still rips it up. It's still the trampling, it just rips fields apart. You put all the plywood down you want. But you can see where everything's been when the concert's over because that part of the field isn't very good anymore. You have to resod it. They have replaced the field at Levi's Stadium 7 times in 15 months. They should replace the field at Heinz Field with field turf.
Oh, that field has never been good. I mean, and they've replaced that umpty 9 times, too.
And you got the Steelers on there for 10 games, and then, you know, including an early playoff exit 11.
Plus the Whipple plays all their district playoff games there.
Whipple plays there. Pitt plays there. And so it just gets worn down. It's just hard. That's why people have been critical. Yeah, put a concert to Beaver Stadium. Come on, Joe won't let him do it. Joe wouldn't do it, blah, 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 blah. Like, there's some common sense as to why you don't do certain things. I think that's one of them. That's one of them. And the place, gets the living daylights ripped out of it in order to do something. It's not a cut and dry situation, as people would think. Playing a hockey game in Beaver Stadium, right? Believe it or not, is not an easy thing to do. Yeah, sure, put a rink in there. It'll be great. Yeah, well, fabulous. Okay, fine. Well, guess what? They winterized the stadium at the end of the year. So you got to get the thing back up and running or else keep it running for a period of time. It's a little easier, I think, now compared to what it was. The parking situation. Look where you park.
I don't know where you would park for a hockey game if there's snow on the ground.
Oh, exactly. I mean, where do you park?
To that game a few years ago, Steve, that where they were bussing them in from everywhere, understand what kind of a challenge that might be. I don't even was that 3-4 years ago when they had in October when they had that snowstorm.
Sure. And so, you know, where do you park? I mean, they had to close down one or two lots before which game was it? The Army game. They had to close down lots. Well, those people had to find other places to park. Well, it could be on December 31st. It could be rock hard ground because of deep freezes and no snow on the ground and you have no issue. Or it could be let's park at satellite lots and do the bus thing. Now, obviously, they have a plan in place for something like that. And you would not just be playing an NHL game at Beaver Stadium. You would also be playing, Penn State would be playing against somebody. I mean, there had been talk at one point about Penguins, Flyers, and the first game would be Notre Dame, Penn State. Now, I mentioned that because Notre Dame's coming in this weekend. To play Penn State at Pagula. But there had been talk that, hey, that would be the wraparound. Then the return would be taking the Winter Classic, an NHL game like the Blackhawks and the Detroit Red Wings, and playing at Notre Dame, and have them Penn State return and play Notre Dame in that version of the Winter Classic. There actually had been some serious talk about that. Never came to fruition, obviously, but there had been serious talk about that.
Wasn't there discussion a few years ago, Steve, about having the PIAA play a state championship games at Beaver Stadium, but they couldn't? But there was an issue about the date because of it falling on a scheduled home game, possibly. Or
no, it wouldn't be a home game, not in December.
No, that's true. It would be in December. I didn't think about that.
They had the PIAA championship game here one time. And the PIAA championships were in Beaver Stadium, I want to say in 1988. But here's the difference between putting it in Beaver Stadium and putting it where it is now in Hershey. In Beaver Stadium, you can have 10 to 15,000 people. Okay? Hey, yeah, it's a special place and the field's special and the whole deal. I got it. Penn State plays there. But 10 to 15,000 people looks like you have 125 people in the stands.
Yeah, it looks empty.
you put it in Hershey, and that looks like a great crowd, doesn't it? It's more intimate and so forth. One of the big reasons the PIAA, for example, you notice that they're not in Harrisburg with the baseball championship or the softball championship. Well, softball used to be in Shippensburg. But they're not, they've moved the baseball championship to Harrisburg. They've done it at Blair County Ballpark and Altoona AA ballparks. You want to know one of the big reasons why they love Medler Field at Lebrano Park? Smaller. It looks better, more intimate. Instead of having, you know, 8,000 to 10,000 seats, and you've got, I don't know, 3,000 to 4,000 people in the seats, and it looks like it's like 40% filled, and it looks, you know, okay. Well, you put that same 4,000 in a 5,500 seat ballpark, and guess what? It looks really good. And that actually is a big plus about putting it there. So a smaller venue, as much as, because you're not going to draw 90,000 fans to see the PIAA football championship.
That's true.
It is not. Okay, you're not. You're going to reasonably draw, what, 15 to 20?
I'd say, yeah, 15 I think would be a good number.
All right. And so you're in the right venue for it. I mean, that makes complete sense. They did it here one time, and I think the big largest draw was a little bit more than 10,000.
Mansion Park is a nice setting, but weather-wise, yes, it can be a challenge. That I think that's the biggest issue there is the weather.
What, the weather's different than Hershey?
It is a little bit because of the elevation. They're more apt to get snow where Hershey, on a borderline type storm, where Hershey wouldn't. And I think that's been the problem. When it has stormed, it's stormed a lot more at Mansion Park than it has in other parts of the state. You know, where normally you'd get a couple of inches of snow, they'd get 5 or 6, and it becomes a little more of an issue. And I know that was the problem several years ago when they had it at Mansion Park.
Yeah, a long time ago with Ron Paulus, it snowed, yeah. But I also recall that in Hershey with Alex Kenny at running back for State College just a few years ago, they played in a driving snowstorm.
Oh, I'm not saying it doesn't snow at Hershey. I don't mean that. I'm just saying it seems to be historically more of an issue at Mansion Park than it has been at Hershey. Whether that's coincidental or not, I don't know.
I think it's completely coincidental.
But you know what? I'm a big fan of, personally, of the grass fields. I don't really have any particular reason why. I just like the look of it. But I will say this. At a high school level, I support and understand why you would want a turf field there. And small colleges, same way. Because you want to be able to use the most facility. You want to be able to use that facility as best you can. So you end up putting a turf field on it. You have a practice field. You have a soccer field. You have a field hockey field. You have a football field in the fall. And then you're actually getting your money's worth out of it without having to put a ton of money back into the field then and repair it. And you also don't need a separate soccer field then and a separate field hockey field. You can actually work the schedule around it, and that stadium would get used 5 nights a week or maybe even more. But at Beaver Stadium, I love the fact that they have grass there.
There are only 3 stadiums in the Big Ten that have grass. That's it.
Let's see. Michigan, Penn State.
Michigan doesn't. There are 4 stadiums in the Big Ten that have grass.
How long has it been since Michigan hasn't?
10, 11 years.
No, that's about right. I was probably the last year I was there was probably the last year they had grass.
Michigan State, Purdue, Northwestern, and Penn State are the only 4 that have grass. The other 10 are all field turf now.
Was Michigan State turf at one point?
Yes, Michigan State was turf, went back to grass. In fact, Jason Henderson, former Penn State offensive tackle, who graduated in landscape management, was the lead on the team that put grass into Michigan State. And Ohio State at grass, at AstroTurf, went to grass, went back to field turf. Michigan had AstroTurf, grass, went back to field turf. Iowa went from AstroTurf to grass, back to field turf. Wisconsin has been turf as long as I can remember. Nebraska's been turf as long as I can remember.
Northwestern's turf, isn't it?
No, they're grass.
They're grass.
Their grass. Yeah, they were turf. They were turf and they changed the grass. Purdue has never had turf. They have prescription athletic turf. Minnesota, of course, was playing in the dome. Then when they went outside, they put turf in. Illinois has always been turf since Penn State was in the conference. Indiana has been field turf. I did the last game that they had in that stadium on alleged grass. It was actually
alleged
sand that was
painted.
Well, it was sand that was painted green.
Alleged grass.
They painted the field green to make it look like it had grass.
Well, that's like down at VMI where they in Lexington where they have Caribbean grass or something like that. And if you go there late in the year, it is very, very brown.
Yeah, well, and like I said, Larry Johnson actually ran for 327 yards in that game. But, I mean, there was some grass out there, but the vast majority of it was all dug up divots, and they filled it in with sand, and they painted the field green. I mean, that's the old Candlestick Park trick. That's what they used to do at Candlestick Park
right.
for the playoffs all the time. They'd paint the field green. That's what they do. And so then that was the last game they played on that. Then they ripped it out. Penn State played the last game at Ohio Stadium on grass as well. And midseason, they put turf in, just like they did in Foxborough with the Patriots. Midseason, they took grass out, they put turf in. Field turf is completely different now than AstroTurf. It's completely different. AstroTurf, you got abrasions and cuts sliding on it. This cuts back all of that by 90% to 95%, and you really, I mean, because Penn State has a field turf outdoor field and a field, and of course it's field turf at Haluba Hall. But
AstroTurf reminded me like walking on a sponge.
Yeah, to a point. If you're on field turf long enough, your back kind of gets a little, your legs get a little, because, I mean, I'll feel like near the end of a practice going, okay, stretch out a little bit. And I'm not running around. But it's still exponentially better than AstroTurf, and there are a lot of benefits. I mean, Notre Dame's now gone to field turf for their field. I was doing baseball at West Virginia. All field turf baseball field except for the pitcher's mound. So the groundskeeper's out there, and he's working on the mound, working on the mound, working on the mound, and the players are giving him just heck. And he says, I better make sure this is the best mound in baseball. It's the only plot of dirt I get to take care of here. They don't even have a tarp. Hey, Mike Kresovich, who's on that grounds crew at Beaver Stadium, awesome guy, one of the best. Happy birthday, Mike. It's his birthday today. We will come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, so Mike Kresovich, happy birthday to you. Great job working at Beaver Stadium all the time, old friend. Our thanks to Ross and Sana, MLB Network, for joining us today. Our thanks also to Dave Ritchie, the chief, who joined us. Also, our thanks to Pat O'Brien for joining us today, Steve Williams. And in a cameo appearance, because someone just couldn't stop asking questions, Matt Cotrillo.
Matt would like to be interviewed by me next week to balance things out time-wise.
I think you... if you want, you can bring Matt in now and ask him, you know, if he'd like you to interview him.
No, he just thought he'd get more airtime if I interviewed him. It seems to be the case.
You just got so excited. You just
I got
stop.
On a roll. I just couldn't control it. I just got on a roll.
Oh, yeah, you did.
I love talking about high school football, Steve.
Yes, but we had a window to do it in. And one more guest to get to.
You know, it seems to be I have that same problem on the Eagle 107 pregame show. Brevity is not a strength of mine. But if you need 15 minutes absorbed, I'm your man.
And with that, we're out of time for today. Tomorrow, Paul Keels, the play-by-play voice of Ohio State football. Rich Scarcello, Reading Eagle. Tim May, Columbus Dispatch. Stanley Jackson, BTN. All on the show tomorrow. Can't wait to talk to you about a preview Penn State, Ohio State. No Kevin questions.